which is what you need to do if you don't have RAM, because a C compiler needs a stack so that you can jump back and forth between functions. For version 2, we solved it by having a ROM CC, a custom C compiler that produced machine code that didn't need any RAM. Needless to say, it was kind of unique, and while an amazing project in itself, it hasn't been really maintained, and there's a bug or two in there that isn't so nice. And we know GCC, and we prefer to use GCC, so hence the requirement for hashes running in version 3. Alright, so BIOS replacement. The BIOS, what does it do? It does really only two things today. It does basic hardware initialization, and it starts up an operating system. It provides also some interrupt services for really old operating systems, but most operating systems today don't use them at all. They were used back in the day for printer output, serial port output, screen output, keyboard input, basic I/O. But yeah, again, modern operating systems, they have their own drivers, so we focus on only part of that. Okay, why? It used to be a library. Always called by the operating system to do this input-output. But then stuff started happening, so that it wasn't really only the operating system calling into the BIOS. We had the first laptops, and when the lid of the laptop closed, you wanted it to fall asleep so that you could put it in a bag and walk away with it. So they invented this standard called APM, which isn't super bad, but still pretty old. And through that, we got hibernation. This hibernation, it uses a feature in the CPU called system management mode, or a mode of the CPU. How many people in here know about system management mode? So slightly more. Good. I'm going to go through it just the same. System management mode is an execution mode for the CPU introduced in the mobile 386 processor. It allows you to set up a predefined handler, software that will, a function that will run on certain events. When this function is called, everything in the CPU is saved, and state is switched so that you always know that you're able to execute your code in a safe way. So you can, it doesn't matter if the CPU is busy handling an interrupt or if it's in an operating system doing whatever function or wherever. If you jump to system management mode or if you switch to system management mode, you're always in this same state and knowing that everything is known. Also, there was, of course, a new electrical interrupt signal introduced with the CPU, or with this mode, to trigger this mode, system management interrupt. But it's not only activated from hardware. You can set up these SMI traps, which invoke the system management mode handler whenever someone accesses a special RAM location, or whenever someone performs an I/O access to a special port, or the port that you configure. So this is good or bad? It's handy for hibernation, but there are some drawbacks as well, because the operating system isn't really aware of what's going on anymore. And this is used. This is used quite a lot. In modern hardware, actually, you will see entire PCI devices being virtualized using system management mode. So system management mode handler hooks into the PCI detection scheme so that when software does an I/O access to see to talk to the PCI bus, it's not really talking to hardware, but this SMM handler instead. And there you go, you have a virtual PCI device. So APM was okay, and then came ACPI. advanced configuration and power interface specification standard for power management and describing the hardware, how it's configured. From our friends at HP, Intel, Microsoft, Phoenix Technologies is a BIOS vendor, and Toshiba. The document I got hold of is revision 3 from 2006 and some 600 plus pages, a lot of fun. ACPI, one of the things it specifies, part of the power, well, both configuration and power actually, is a virtual machine that has its own bytecode, of course, and this all lives in the BIOS. So that's worth repeating, it's in the BIOS, it's completely outside the operating system control. This bytecode comes in some of the ACPI tables that are in the BIOS, and they are executed, the bytecode is executed by the virtual machine to do stuff. So really outside the operating system does this, is that for real? Yeah, that's the first implementation they did, but it turned out it was pretty slow. So this virtual machine, it moved into the operating system. I heard a figure that they lost about 5% performance when from this virtual machine running outside the operating system. Moved into the operating system, we all remember the fun in Linux when ACPI was new. I've seen the number 90,000 lines of code to implement the virtual machine in Linux. And the good thing, or the fun thing, is that it still runs outside the operating system security model, because that's the only way it can work. That's how it was designed, so that's how it has to work. So if you're using ACPI, you're really executing this unknown bytecode from your BIOS vendor in your operating system with root plus privileges. Some comparison between the BIOS and the other players, and also I'm going to mention some other projects that are kind of related. The BIOS is almost 30 years old, maybe even more. Started out as tape I/O abstraction when the first PCs were about to start up. They needed to load code from a tape unit, and there were two makers of tape units, so, and of course they didn't have the same programming interface, and the BIOS was used to abstract the tape I/O so that you only had to, the operating system or the bootloader only had to use one interface to load stuff from tape. 30 years later, we still have the BIOS. It's a healthy, large API, 100 plus calls, mostly real mode runs in. Again, the interrupt services are primarily used in real mode, and that means not used a lot. I recently heard a presentation from one BIOS vendor, and they were talking about their code base. They mentioned that they have 4,300 files in their BIOS code base, but it's modular, so it's really easy to work with. Good to know. Of course, all those files are assembly also. I don't know. So EFI is the new kid on the block. It's the successor of the BIOS, spearheaded by Intel. EFI is already present in the Intel Max. And as far as I know, if you're going to start Vista 64-bit, you'll also need EFI in your PC. It's also shipping on some Intel mainboards. So EFI is a sort of open specification. Looking into it, it's really a lot like an operating system. There's this core where stuff is going on, but you don't really know what. It has networking services, it has timer services, it has a lot of services. It's open in the sense that you can find specifications and you can develop applications that fit into this operating system. So you can write plugins or what to call them. It isn't possible though to look into the EFI core source code, as far as I know. If you do, you have to sign NDAs, where some of the clauses are that you, or boiled down to that, you are not allowed to talk to anyone else about what you're, what you discover inside EFI, the EFI source code. So we don't really know what EFI does. And of course, EFI could be using system management mode. So now we have this execution environment, I guess, operating system almost, with a networking stack that can be using system management mode to virtualize hardware before your operating system is running and without your operating system ever knowing about it. Maybe not so nice. Some other stuff, related stuff, Grub and Lilo, how many know about those? Okay, excellent. Bootloaders used to start Linux or other operating systems from hard drive, typically. Redboot is similar to, has a similar purpose to core boot or as core boot. But it's based on ECOS and really an embedded operating system. So, but it, that may sound a lot like EFI or EFI, but because it's really open source, it's much better, I think, yeah. Maybe you've heard about it, but it's not really common on x86 hardware. Core boot isn't strictly x86 either, but so far it's what all the developers have had access to and where most of the code runs. We have some power stuff in version 1 and version 2. We also have some alpha stuff in version 1. U-boot, also another player in this arena, mostly for smaller embedded stuff, running power, ARM, MIPS. There were some MIPS guys talking to us on the mailing list, and they seemed kind of interested in making core boot run, but we haven't heard a lot more from them. So how do we replace the BIOS? How does this work? The BIOS does this hardware init and starts up the operating system from the master boot record, etc. Core boot only does the first part. It does hardware initialization, and then core boot is done, finished, and another application or another program has to take over and do the rest to get the system into the shape you want it. That other program is called a payload. It can start an operating system, it can be an application, it can be some utility, etc. And core boot and the payload, they go together into one file, which you flash into the flash chip on your mainboard, the BIOS. So you replace the BIOS in the flash chip. There's a bunch of different payloads that came from the fact that flash chip size was again too small. So we have FIDO, which is good for booting from local storage, hard drives, CD-ROMs. Supports various file systems, fellow various kernels, recently got multi-boot support. Etherboot and GTXC, maybe you know, is used to boot from network, local operating system kernel from the network, runs fine as a payload. It's really handy for development also. CBIOS is an open source BIOS implementation. So if you really want the BIOS, because you want to start some old legacy operating system, then you can take core boot and CBIOS, put them together, and you get an open source BIOS. So still the sort of sad BIOS API, but at least it's open source, so you can verify what it does and maybe improve on it when it doesn't do what you want. Open firmware is popular for the power guys and Spark guys. It's what they always run. There is open firmware also for x86, which you can use as a payload if you're into that. And it says Linux here under bootloaders. That's because since, what was it, 2.6.26 or 25 or something, the Linux kernel learned how to start another kernel using the kexec system. So you can put core boot and a really small Linux kernel into your flash chip, and use that kernel to and all the nice drivers in it to load a second kernel from somewhere else. And that's again the original idea of it, with the project. Grub 2 is in parentheses because there was a bunch of work done on it, but the patches weren't integrated upstream, unfortunately. They're available in a separate tree, though, and I think they are slowly making their way into official Grub 2. Can be also utilities. Memtest 8.6. Maybe you've already used it for something. Works just fine as a payload. Core Info is a small testing utility that we developed. And here's Linux again. So you have a, if you have a bit bigger flash chip, or maybe you've replaced your flash chip with a bigger one, you can use a small, I guess, rescue system with a kernel and an initram FS that has some good utilities that you like to use. You can put that in your flash chip and access it whenever you need. But you can also use applications or start applications from Core Boot as payloads. I'm hoping I will be able to show you Tint. It depends a little bit on the projector. It's a nice game that was ported, made into a payload. Bayou is worth a special mention because Core Boot can only start one payload and there's no way to go back. So what if you want to combine more of these? Well, then you need Bayou. Bayou is just that. Combines several payloads into one, and you can either get a nice graphical menu, or you get to script how the execution should work between the payloads, or what the execution flow is. And payloads can return to Bayou, but Bayou can never return to Core Boot and can never call Core Boot. Both Tint and Bayou, and Core Info as well, are using libpayload. That's a small C library that we've developed so that you can just recompile a really simple C application, which doesn't need an operating system or any operating system services, into a payload. If you do that, you don't have two big needs in your app. You can have a nice appliance with almost instant on. Your app almost running almost instantly. What about these guys? OpenBSD, FreeBSD. I have to resort to CBIOS, unfortunately. I tried to drum up some interest in the BSD community to get people involved and working on bootloaders. The guys I met, they said, "Oh, yeah, this is kind of nice. We'd like to have this, but." So far, no code. For NetBSD, we have one guy in the Core Boot project who's done some work on porting the stand directory so that it will work with Core Boot. I'm not a real big BSD guy, as far as I know. It's really the bootloader with a really early file system driver and so on. DOS can be started using CBIOS and Windows. If you, for some reason, want to start that, you can also do that with CBIOS. Personally, I'm kind of interested in trying to reuse the React OS preloader also, because it starts Windows in a, well, I guess more native way. It skips past a lot of the BIOS stuff that no one at Microsoft almost knows about anyway, and uses a more sophisticated scheme for deploying an operating system, which is actually standardized and originated from, where was it? The Alpha, I think it's called R. A few words about the auxiliary tools that we've discovered a need for. We have BuildROM. So Core Boot and payloads and flash chip and what's all this sounds like quite a big puzzle to put together. And that's right, it can be a bit overwhelming at first. BuildROM is a great tool that will allow you to just select which mainboard you have, which version of Core Boot you want, which payload you want, how that payload should be configured and how big your flash chip is. In the nice menu, you say make, and BuildRoam does all the work for you, putting this together into just one file that you can flash into the flash chip. Make elf image is used to turn, as it says, a Linux kernel into a payload. Payloads have to be elf binaries, and the VM Linux file in the built by the kernel build system may also be usable as a payload. We haven't really experimented with that a lot yet. NVRAM tool is for messing around with NVRAM. We have 256 bytes of battery back storage in pretty much any mainboard these days. When your battery CMOS or your button cell battery runs out, that's the memory that is wiped. NVRAM tool is pretty generic. It can be used also to handle settings for other firmware or for other, yeah, anyone else interested in the NVRAM. Super IO tool, Intel tool. Pretty much the same thing. Peek and poke at the Super IO and look at Intel chipset configuration, how it's all set up. MSR tool, as I mentioned in the beginning, is a register dumper for just any MSR in any system. Not a really big database yet, but hopefully it'll grow. Also, this deserves a special mention, FlashROM. I could really do a talk on just FlashROM, but I'm trying to give a bit of overview here, so I'll be brief. FlashROM is a flashing tool for BSD and Linux and Solaris. Supports cross-flashing. So if you have your boot floppy with the .exe file from whatever BIOS vendor you have and you want to upgrade your BIOS, then maybe that .exe file is going to check that, or normally that .exe file will check that you're actually flashing the right BIOS onto your mainboard, so that you're not going to end up breaking it and having to return it to whoever sold it to you. We thought that was kind of limited, so we don't do that. Instead, we allow cross-flashing. You can flash any flash chip on any board that is just electrically and software-wise compatible with any content. There's no limit. If you want to flash junk into your chip, go ahead and have fun. Don't come to us asking for help, though. If your board doesn't start. Now, we'll try to help, of course. So, FlashROM supports over 100 flash chips. It supports 60-plus chipsets and a bunch of mainboards. And this is necessary because each flash chip type and each chipset type, and sometimes also each mainboard type, requires special write-enable code in order for FlashROM to be able to access the flash chip. And that's not really well documented, so we have to experiment with that, implementing that. It's pretty okay though. You can get make some good progress with just a multimeter and some patience. Also, those 23 mainboards, there are variations on those. So the 23 might actually be twice that, because other mainboards are using exactly the same components and are designed in exactly the same way. So there's no way FlashROM can tell them apart. And it will work just as well on both of them. Also, pushpin flash. I wish I invented this. I think it's such a good idea. If you have a couple of different flash chips and you're moving them back and forth, especially if they're the same brand, it's really easy to mix them up, and suddenly you have no good flash chip. So of course we advise everyone to make two backups and store them far away from where you're working, but while working, this is a good idea. It's handy to have this little knob on the chip, and it's nice because you can color code them as well. Okay, so demo. I'm going to show you Core Boot version 3 with a Linux kernel payload running on a PC Engine's Alex board. It's made by a Swiss company. PC Engines company, and is the successor of the RAP board, which was pretty popular, I think. I have a serial console hooked up. It's a pretty straightforward board, 500 something megahertz CPU, 256 megs of RAM. I have the operating system image on a compact flash card, but the kernel, again, the kernel itself is loaded from the boot flash. So I'm going to do a reset, and we should see some messages. Here we go, core boot starting up. Okay, now we see the Linux kernel is starting, and we're done. Now it's going to get exciting. Let's see if this works. It usually doesn't, because I'm going to try to show you a special video mode, or lib payload actually, which has console drivers which output not super standard video mode yet on this board. So let's see what the projector thinks. Get the connector. Let's see. Here we go. So this is by you. Does anyone have a PS2 keyboard, by the way? I guess not. No, okay, my bad. I should have prepared that. Never mind. Well, anyway, system information is the core info payload. It shows a similar interface, just it's green and white, with information about PCI devices, the NVRAM contents. You can poke at PCI device registers if you want to, show some CPU information, some info about core boot that started it. Tint is a Tetris game, which is good to have some fun when you verify that everything is good in core info. And finally, when you're done playing Tetris, you can fire up Philo and boot the system. Okay, some talk about attacks and defenses. You can do, there was a paper by Jacob Applebaum and also a talk at the last Hook conference this summer. Pretty cool stuff. It actually shows that RAM chips, the contents in them doesn't really go away just because you switch off the power. Instead, it slowly decays, and that can take up to minutes. So through core boot, we can stop the startup process just after we've initialized the RAM controller, and that way be able to start reading out data as quickly as possible. Also, we could get even trickier and do all of this in cache as RAM, and that way we would be able to get a complete image of the RAM. So TPM emulation, system management mode rootkits, because system management mode allows you to virtualize hardware really in general in the PC, you can do anything. TPM sharing means you set up what appears to be this nice TPM device that your operating system is talking to, but instead of sending this to hardware somewhere, you send it out over the network to maybe that Apple machine in the corner, so that you can actually share that TPM in the Apple machine on multiple systems. Hide the flash contents if you want to hide yourself because you've injected code into the flash chip. You can use system management mode to make sure no one notices. Fan fun, of course, you can control the rotation speed of the fans and play tunes because the sound changes depending on what speed the fan is rotating. And user lockout, if you don't play Tetris well enough to win a game, then you don't get to boot your operating system. Just some ideas. So for defense, some of the same stuff. RAM readout, we can, as soon as the RAM controller is on, we can just clear all of RAM. And we can also make sure that whenever you shut down your system, we clear all of RAM so that there's only junk in there or just no data at all. Open case alarm. The LAN cable is a reference from that other conference. I shouldn't have reused these slides, just verbatim. Sorry about that. If someone opens the computer case and you have a detector or a switch, we could trigger system management mode and again clear all RAM. ACPI filter, if you want to take back control or just make sure that no one is doing bad stuff in ACPI. Another good way to apply core boot, ACLs, so make sure that your system will only start if you have the right hard disk attached or if you have the right USB devices attached. Virtualization, again, anything that you don't want to be discovered can be encrypted transparently. Coming back to the flash lock bits, make sure they're set. Some chipsets have non-reversible lock bits, so that if you've set them to protect the flash chip, it's not possible to reset them unless you actually reset the entire system. That means you can never rewrite the flash chip more than or past this point when the lock bit has been set. And again, hide flash contents or just provide different flash chip contents so that anyone trying to dump BIOS image and... Oh, okay, it's two keyboard. Excellent. I think we have time for that. So that anyone wanting to do offline analysis will not succeed. So let me try the keyboard.
The very best you can buy.
Thanks. Here we go, core info, some CPU information. Hello. PCI devices, and then the config registers. On the side, we have the NVRAM. Some core boot information. This core boot is running version 2 of core boot. It was built in September. La la la. We're done with this. Let's go play. Some fun. And finally, starting up the operating system, which we may not be able to see here because the kernel I have on here doesn't have the right video driver. Or? No. As expected. So, conclusion. Good and bad. We have some nice features in core boot. We have a really short startup time, but there's stuff that we could do better. Other benefits: it's open source. Core boot itself is GPL. Libpayload, however, is BSD licensed, and also TinyCurse is the curses implementation in libpayload. So that if you have an application that you don't really want to open source, you can still compile it as a payload. Auditability is of course good, important point for open source. This is starting to become more and more relevant for governments as well. They're realizing that, well, maybe all this unknown code isn't really what we want in our systems. Good thing. Also, Core Boot is written almost entirely in C, as opposed to the 4,300 assembly files. We have mostly C files. We have some assembly, of course, for the caches RAM, for example. But so the bulk is C, and it's so much easier to work with. Assembly can be fun, but it does take a lot more time. And not as many people are good at it. We also have just one source tree for all the main boards that we support. I think that's a big deal. Whereas the commercial BIOS vendors, they tend to fork their entire code base for each new main board. So they have 4,000 plus files for every main board. And they their argument is that, well, that means you can easily go back to the version you have in production in the field and make just one small change to it and ship out a new version. But I guess they don't know version control systems all that well, because you can do that using version control too. Personally, I prefer the version control strategy. So reusability and extensibility, of course, it's a lot easier to work with if you want to do customizations. Bad stuff, I'm going to be honest, we could do better with testing. There's a test infrastructure set up, but it's kind of cumbersome to integrate your board into it, which means that not a lot of hardware is being tested. The idea is to test each commit on actual hardware. And the infrastructure is there, but again, it's a bit tricky to implement. Few boards are really 100% complete, working perfectly in Core Boot. If you ask me, I would say that none are. There are some, though, that don't need all that much new or more stuff. Just small bits and pieces missing for maybe 10 boards to be perfect. ACPI is a bit of a problem because to do this power management, suspend and RAM, etc., we really need to do the equivalent of what the vendor BIOS ACPI table bytecode does, but we can't reuse the ACPI bytecode because it's intellectual property of the BIOS vendor, or so they say. So conclusion, there's a lot of fun stuff going on, and I'd love to see more people involved, and I hope this was kind of interesting. Personal thanks, again, from another conference. This is the webography, coreboot.org. We also have a mailing list, which is where all the activity is. Check out IRC if that's your scene. And also the coreboot.org page has a lot of subpages for almost all of the stuff that I mentioned here, phyloader, payload, etherboot, just throw names at it or use the search function. So I think we have maybe 3 minutes for questions. Okay?
Yep.
EPC laptops. Unfortunately, no laptop support so far. There's a bit of a problem with the laptops. They are mostly like standard PCs, desktops, but there's always this extra microcontroller in there for handling stuff that isn't on a desktop. Special keys, we have the volume keys, the whatever, we have battery charge management. There's the interface for the suspend and resume when you close the lid, something has to happen.
These things on the EPC, they are accessible from the Linux kernel.
Only because they're using ACPI.
Yeah.
Right, so it's really calling into the factory BIOS or running the bytecode from the factory BIOS. And of course we could reverse engineer that, or if you want to help reverse engineer that, please come join us, but it's a lot of work. Also, most laptops are using Intel hardware, and it's not so easy to get the right documentation from Intel, whereas we have a lot of help from AMD. They have two guys working, two employed people working with the community for Loop. That's awesome. They also have a lot of available documentation. So in general, AMD hardware works better. But we're starting to see interest also from other hardware vendors. Keep your eyes open, though. I can't say too much, but I think there's going to be some really good stuff happening towards the end of the year. certain page buttons.
Can I have two questions, man?
Yeah, sure.
Red boot.
Sorry?
What about red boot?
Yes, what about red boot?
Does it work as a payload? Or?
Red boot is I would say, an alternative to core boot. And
okay.
Red boot generally targets other hardware platforms. Core boot is, we say, core boot is first-hand PCI centric and second-hand x86 centric. Mm. So, as long as there's a PCI bus that needs enumeration and setup and so on, core boot is a good choice. If there isn't any PCI devices or any big PCI bus, then maybe one of the smaller bootloaders are actually a better choice, even for x86. That was one question. The other?
Yeah, before the
PC. Oh, okay.
Reached my quota.
No. Also, if just a quick mention, if I may, if anyone is interested in getting started with this, but think that it's a bit intimidating to start flashing the BIOS chip on your mainboard, I have a few pre-modified mainboards with dual flash chips and a switch that you can use to hack on this. So just come talk to me if you're interested. Okay, thank you, Peter, for coming.
Thank you very much.